With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
White the single back with Brady up under center. He takes the snap. He play fakes to White. He stands in the end zone. He looks down the middle. He fires and the ball is caught in the back of the end zone by Danny.
It's a catch.
Amendola! Touchdown! Patriots!
It's a catch!
He made the grab just inside the end line. And New England has taken the lead.
I love Tom Brady.
He did it again. The Patriots were down 10 in the fourth quarter. They're Super Bowl bound. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Ben Valent covers the NFL and the Patriots for the Boston Globe. He's a local guy and a real good dude I got to know when I was on the Redskins beat traveling around to NFL events. He was on the scene yesterday, as he has been over the last few seasons, covering the Patriots. Ben, you tell me if you think I'm off base here, but I really do believe that was one of the more impressive Tom Brady playoff performances we've seen, just from the standpoint of he's had no Edelman all year long, obviously, but Gronk goes down. He's playing a vaunted defense in Jacksonville. He's down 10 points, and the chips were stacked against him.
No doubt about it, and it's almost like we take it for granted now, especially after that incredible comeback in the Super Bowl last year against the Falcons. If not for that game, you know, we'd be waxing poetic about this comeback and how it deserves an NFL Films breakdown, and, you know, we'll be remembering this one forever. And now it's just like, well, you know, put it in the stack of other Tom Brady comebacks. Just incredible. I think I saw a stat that this was the fourth time that Brady and Belichick have come back from down by 10 points in the fourth quarter in a playoff game. And so that's their fourth time, and no one else has done it more than once. So they're just, like, it's getting to the point where they're just lapping the field now. And this is their eighth Super Bowl appearance between them, 10th for the franchise. It's just amazing that this run continues, and here we are almost two decades in, and the dynasty is still going.
Yeah, Ben, it's got to be cool for you. For me, as a football fan, it's like if you turn on Star Wars and the Death Star just keeps blowing up every planet until the rebels surrender. Like, it's no longer mystery. There's no longer anything behind it. As soon as Jacksonville didn't get a first down when they're up 20-10, I go, that's it, game over, Patriots are going to win this thing. You just knew it was a matter of time. How is this team different, though, than some of the past ones? There's more... I feel like there's more swirling around the Patriots this time with the Wickersham piece and the Alex Guerrero stuff. Is this group different at all? So does that make it almost more impressive?
What's impressive is that they were able to win yesterday without Gronkowski, and that they were able to go 13-3 this year and capture the number one seed while missing Julian Edelman all season. So I think what you've seen is a deeper Patriots team, especially on offense. Deion Lewis has emerged as a terrific lead running back. And Rex Burkhead, even though he kind of dealt with some injuries this year, when he was healthy, was a very productive player for them. Gronkowski had a monster season when he was healthy. Brandon Cooks on the outside had a 1,000-yard season. Danny Amendola comes up in the clutch whenever they need him. Chris Hogan, you can go down the list. In years past, when either Gronk or Edelman goes down, it's pretty much been the end of the Patriots. But now they've been able to persevere without them, and it just shows how deep they are and how good Tom Brady is at adjusting without his favorite targets in there. Yeah, without Gronk and without Edelman to go against the league's number two defense, a very fast team, a great secondary, pretty impressive comeback yesterday by the Patriots.
Ben Valent is our guest, covers the Patriots in New England for the Boston Globe. It turned out for me that the stitches story and the thumb, which is what I expected all along, was a big fat nothing burger. I didn't think Brady was impacted at all. I didn't look like any of his throws, any of his accuracy, any of his zip was changed. Is that overstating it? Was it actually somewhat heroic that he battled through that? Was it a storyline or not?
It was a storyline, and the injury was real, but I think Brady avoided the worst-case scenario. I think he got really lucky. His thumb got really bent awkwardly out of shape. It ripped the webbing in his hand. Blood's gushing out. I think he had 10 or 12 stitches in there. So it was a real injury, and Brady had a great quote yesterday after the game. He's like, after all we've been through this year and my career too, He's like, I'm not ending the season on a handoff on a Wednesday. That's just not happening. So he was determined to play, and he was lucky that, you know, the thumb, he didn't tear any ligaments, and the thumb wasn't too badly dislocated. They really avoided disaster, and I agree with you. It didn't affect him yesterday. He was able to take snaps from under center. He threw some balls with impressive zip down the field. And so then by game time, yeah, I don't think it affected him. But they didn't know how it was going to play out, and it was a very real injury. You know, he missed practice on Thursday, and Tom Brady does not like to miss a snap in practice, let alone the entire practice the Thursday before the AFC Championship game. So there was a lot of nervousness with the Patriots leading up to the game about how Tom Brady would be, but I think they really avoided disaster. And then by the time the game rolled around, it certainly did not affect him.
At Ben Valin on Twitter, great follow, covers the Patriots for the Boston Globe. Ben, to me, the most impressive thing, besides Brady and the heroics and everything you've already alluded to, was that this defense went from, you know, September, this is their undoing. They're the laughing stock of the league. They're giving up a million points, a million yards. I think they were top three or four in points scored after that point, just in terms of how good that defense was, and they were good in the second half of this game making adjustments. How do they do it? Is it Patricia? Is it Belichick? Is it just guys, you know, becoming part of the Borg, the groupthink? How are they able to do this, and how were they able to do it yesterday?
Well, they don't panic. That's number one, and certainly the Super Bowl was a good example of that. They stick to their game plan, and when the chips get stacked against them, they don't panic, and they tend to stick to their game plan. You know, the first four games of the season, the defense was atrocious. They had all kinds of breakdowns, and receivers for the Panthers and the Texans were running wide open down the field. And that's not a skill thing. That's a scheme and a coaching thing. And you kind of knew that the Patriots would get that cleaned up. It was the same secondary that just won the Super Bowl of talented veteran safety, lots of solid players, you know, Malcolm Butler, Devin McCourty, Patrick Chung, Stephon Gilmore. Other than Gilmore, guys who have been there and done that. And so you knew that the defense wasn't going to continue to be that bad. And from week five onward, they allowed the fewest points in the NFL. I think they finished the season, they were like 29th in yards, but they were fifth in points. And obviously, points are all that matters. They don't have a great pass rush. They don't have a dominant defense, but they just make you earn your way down the field and piece together 10 and 12 play drives. And even though the Jaguars hit them early, the Patriots didn't panic. They still stuck to their game plan. You know, let's load up on the run. Let's make Blake Bortles try to beat us. And they did a fantastic job. I think you saw that in the third and fourth quarter. The Patriots three times punted from Jaguars territory, and a couple of those fourth downs would have been mighty tempting to go for it and let's keep the drive alive, but they decided to punt and trust the defense and pin the Jaguars deep, and it worked perfectly. Finally, at the end of the game, the Jaguars were punting from their own end zone. Amendola returns it all the way back to the Jaguars 30, sets up the game-winning score, and that was that. So defense, field position, the Patriots, they never panic, and they stick to their game plan, and usually in the end, it works out for them.
What's your first thoughts as someone who's going to be covering this Super Bowl on the matchup that is Philadelphia and what it presents for New England?
Seems like it's going to be a rematch of yesterday's game. You have a team that obviously is limited at quarterback, but they have a very creative offensive coordinator and talented players around the quarterback, and they know how to scheme it up and create some openings. And then a very dominant defense, great along the defensive line, talented secondary. Obviously, people are going to focus on the quarterback battle, Tom Brady versus Nick Foles, and when you do that, it seems like a blowout. But the Eagles are a very balanced team, and they're going to test the Patriots' defense with 2 weeks to prepare now and lots of misdirection and trickery and play action. So the Patriots are going to have to be on their toes, and obviously the Eagles' defense is going to be very solid, so the Patriots need to get Rob Gronkowski back from this concussion. So I think it'll be a good game. Obviously, I think most people are going to pick the Patriots. I will as well. But the Eagles are not to be, overlooked. They were the underdog in both their home playoff games, and they came away with some convincing victory. So I still think this will be a good matchup.
Ben, to me, and I want to touch on that matchup that you talked about, to me this reminds me of those Giants teams where defensively they're based on being able to cover with seven. Jim Schwartz doesn't really want to blitz a ton. You can get some pressure with that front four. That's not that it's effective all the time against the Patriots, but if I'm going to design something in a lab, that's how I design it, being able to, again, cover with as many guys as possible while still affecting Brady and his feet. Is that kind of the concern for this Patriots offense, looking at this Eagles defense?
Yeah, certainly the Eagles' defensive line is stout. But again, we're saying all those things about the Jaguars. And, yeah. You know, they slowed the Patriots down. Like, the Patriots only had 10 points entering the fourth quarter, and they only had, I want to say, 332 yards and 24 points. Those are, you know, pretty pedestrian numbers for the Patriots. So the Jaguars' defense certainly slowed down the Patriots. But, you know, in the fourth quarter, the Patriots just – something clicks for them, and maybe they need that urgency. Maybe they need to be trailing in the fourth quarter for the offense to finally click. And you know, the Eagles, they can't just rely on we hope our front four can get some pressure. They need to probably do a little zone blitzing. They need to mix it up a little bit, make sure they get the right matchups, because you know you really need to shut down Tom Brady to be able to keep pace with them offensively. And you know, can Nick Foles and them score 24 points against the Patriots? That'll be the big key.
Ben Valent covers the Patriots. I'm not sure there's a better beat in the country if you're covering sports right now and you want to cover a winning team than up in New England. He does a great job. Check him out on Twitter at BenVolin. Thanks, buddy. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you, Ben.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Good catching up. We've got our odds for the Super Bowl out for the first time. Patriots are obviously favored. We'll tell you what the initial spread is. And the overnight ratings from yesterday's games are in. Tell you what they were in comparison to years past. Next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. I'm Grant. He's Danny. This is The Fan. You're locked in to G&D on this Monday after conference championship games decided our Super Bowl matchup. The odds coming out as we speak from Vegas and our first favorite and spread installed. What would you have guessed? What do you think it's ultimately going to be, Patriots-Eagles?
I think it's ultimately going to settle around 5 points. I think at open I saw 5.5 and 6. Maybe a little bit bigger than I would have guessed, given how good Philadelphia's defense has been in this postseason. I mean, keep in mind, they're hot. That's the recipe to stop the Patriots.
Yes, it is.
So, to me, that's a spread a little bit bigger than I think it'll end up as.
New England implemented initially as 5.5-point favorites. Over under in the total for the game right now, 48 points, which feels, I think, right. I would have guessed right around 45 or 46. I'm predicting something like a 27-23 game. So that gets you right around 50.
Put you
so
in there,
I guess
yeah. That
makes some sense. You look at the recent Super Bowls. Atlanta, New England. Of course, New England was a 3-point favorite. They won 34-28 in overtime. The Carolina Denver Super Bowl. Carolina was a 5-point favorite and lost by 14. Seattle, New England was a pick'em game. New England won by 4. Denver was a 2.5-point favorite over Seattle. Seattle won 43-8 in that game.
Yeah.
Vegas got shellacked there. San Francisco, Baltimore, going back to the Harbaugh Bowl. 49ers were -4.5. The Ravens won 34-31. Giants, Patriots back Super Bowl 46. New England -2.5. Lost to the Giants by 4 points. Then you're all the way back to Green Bay and Pittsburgh when the Packers were 3-point favorites and won the game by 6, 31-25, covering in what was a competitive game. Other note that jumped across my Twitter feed this morning. We got our overnight ratings in on the ratings, which are important at this point because the trend has not been good for the NFL in the postseason. Pats-Jags, game one of the doubleheader, better of the two games yesterday, drew a 27.3 overnight rating on CBS, a shade down from last year's early game Packers-Falcons, which was a 27.4. But 27.4, 27.3 is basically the same thing.
It's almost, identical.
Last year's Green Bay-Atlanta game drew 46.3 million viewers. Imagine Pats-Jags will end up being around 44 or 45 million. Is what Richard Deitch is speculating. So you may have had a million or so fewer people watching Patriots, Jaguars, Brady Bortles than watched Ryan and Rodgers last year in the Green Bay Atlanta game. Basically the same ratings or a hair down. Not overly surprising to me there.
Yeah, the trend had been 10% down, 15% down. So I think this is encouraging for the NFL to have basically identical numbers when the trend has been a little different than that.
It's also a good thing that 27 million people watched your game.
Well, yeah.
Excuse me, 45 million people watched your game and that you got a 27 overnight rating.
That I would say is definitely positive. I mean, when you get to this point, I got to watch Thursday and then Saturday and then Sunday and then Monday. You don't have that. This is the marquee. So if they didn't get good numbers for these, then you can have the, oh, my God, let's all panic and change the entire spectrum of the sport. this is the we're still reminded when you get a great big showcase, everyone's watching. So the dilution. What am I trying to say? How do I say that word? Diluting.
I think diluting is what you're looking
yeah,
for.
Yeah. So the
when
diluting.
It gets diluted.
Yeah. The diluting is a problem when it's Thursday, it's Sunday, it's Monday, it's too many nights of the week, too many London games, too much 9:30 in the morning, too much of that crap. When it's marquee, people tune in.
Jason LaCanfora is reporting. Of course, he gets a lot of stories correct and is a reporter who's been around the NFL for a long time, CBS Sports and some other outlets. Giants are expecting to go in a different direction on their defense with their coordinating role. Steve Spagnuolo's terrific.
Please go hire him immediately, Redskins. Immediately.
He's apparently going to be out.
Immediately.
Pat Shurmur's taken over as their head coach, the OC of the Vikings. He's boys with Jack Del Rio, who got fired by the Raiders. So the plan, apparently, is that Shurmur's going to hire Jack Del Rio to be his DC. Steve Spagnuolo will no longer be the defensive coordinator of the Giants. Biggest winner here, if Kirk Cousins stays in Washington, D.C., is Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
Spagnuolo has Cousins' number. No team has had a better plan over the years against Cousins than the Giants.
His numbers are by far the worst of any team he's played regularly against the Giants and the other two teams.
Well, he
in the
told
division.
Us, he even cited it, Spagnuolo's name when we sat down with him on Friday. He said, for whatever reason, Steve Spagnuolo always has a great plan against me, and he really has my number. And he said that on our air in that end of year conversation when he basically said that was one of the worst games he's played as a professional, if not his worst game with the Redskins. But if I'm the Giants, I'm not making that change. That surprises me.
So he's one of those guys with a great reputation, that, and sometimes the numbers don't necessarily match up with that. But that, to me, is one of those guys that I just put in that column of excellent defensive coordinator, please go hire him. I would love to see what he would do with a little bit of talent influx here in Washington, D.C. It won't happen. They're going to keep Minuski and tell you that everything is fine. We, you know, all our hires are great hires, and we know exactly what we're doing. We're all geniuses, and keep promoting us and give us bigger offices. I would go get that guy immediately. The instant he becomes available, I wouldn't let him go anywhere else. I would do the Dan Snyder, take him to Morton's, get him a steak. You can't leave the complex till a contract's hammered.
You're running
out
a 4-3 at that point.
100%.
Guys like Ryan Kerrigan are have to learn how to play defensive end again like he was doing at Purdue closer to a decade ago than a year ago.
I would do it this instant because I think one of their difficult challenges is finding guys that really want to play defensive line in the 34. So I think that's a contributor to why they haven't been able to break through.
I would bring in Spagnuolo and go 43 probably as well. I just think he's a really good DC, and I think you could do a lot better than Greg Minuski. I don't think Minuski deserves to lose his job. It's a question of, do you want to try to be great? Do you want to try to go get
what's
someone?
What's the point of all this?
Absolutely. Who's just a better option than he is. We've taken a couple calls. We've sprinkled them in. They've been a little bit of the sprinkle on the icing of this show.
Seasoning.
I would like to hit the phones hard with a call topic next, and here is what I want to ask people. I think that this is one of those polarizing enough questions and figures that this will play because everyone's going to have a firm opinion. Do you like Tony Romo as a color commentator? Yes or no? That is my question on the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines at 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. Why am I asking this? Well, first of all, we all watched. 45 million people in the country watched the game.
Uh-huh.
But we all, and if you're listening, you watched the game yesterday with Tony Romo sitting next to Jim Nance. This is strange for me because Romo is the type of broadcaster that would generally annoy me. It's a lot of laughing and weird sounds and noises and something happens. He's like, oh! Please stop making that noise. Please keep your mic quiet and muted until you're going to speak. And a quarterback's rolling out. He's like, get rid of it, get rid of it. It's a lot of that. And I don't need that. I don't want that. I want the play-by-play broadcaster calling the game and you being quiet until you're analyzing. So there's some bad that comes with him where he does a lot of like the, he's sitting there and it's 3rd and 8 and he goes, here we go, buddy. 3rd and 8. This is the game. And he's very excited. And it feels a little bit like Adam Epstein was allowed into the booth to call color that day. It's just overly excited and very happy, and I'm just happy to be here. The Patriots are playing. However, when he analyzes, when he breaks down football, when he goes back and shows you what just happened conceptually on a play with design and breaks down the schematics, or he previews what's about to happen, he is uber smart. I learned so much. He's probably the most educational and informative color commentator we have, which is what I want. So even though there's more of the Brady
the GOAT. He did it again. Even though
I love Tom Brady.
Whatever that is, there's a lot of that.
Yep.
But there's also a lot of what I crave and I'm starved for. So I tell you this, I really like Tony Romo. And Liz Clark had a tweet earlier this year that I agreed with that I think is, this is all I can come back to when I think of Tony Romo color commentator. She said he's grab your popcorn fun. In the same way like a critic talks about a movie, a campy movie, she called him grab your popcorn fun. Like, you just want to hear this guy. He's having so much fun watching the game. He loves football that it makes it more fun for you. Some of it crosses the line and annoys me. Some of it I'm like, oh, Tony Romo's hilarious.
There are a lot of guys that love football. Charles Davis loves football. He runs circles around Tony Romo in terms of give me information. And you can hear the excitement and the passion when he breaks down a fullback block on the backside to seal up a defensive end.
I love Charles Davis. You won't get me to say anything negative. I think he's probably the best color commentator we have. I learn a little bit more from Romo. And it's because he tries harder, if that makes sense. Like, he kind of wants you to know how smart he is. I don't think Charles Davis does. Romo spends the entire game predicting the plays or telling you why they did something. Or
so
this guy's about to blitz.
So there was one where he goes, he loves throwing to the back in this situation. The pass literally goes to the running back 3 seconds later.
Yeah.
That stuff's incredible, and I'm with you. There's way too much of the tax that I've got to pay to sift through and
What's
get my numbers.
What I'm talking about?
I don't know. I'm going to replay.
Yes.
Tell me what happened or don't. The, Jim, This is not speech.
So are you binary? You like him or you don't?
This is a don't. This is an unquestioned don't.
Unquestioned?
This is outrageous that you're allowing this to take place.
You agree that he's super smart.
Of course he is.
You agree that he makes you smarter.
Of course. The idea that there's somehow no happy medium between informative, educated football analysis and, Jim, I can't believe my pants are on fire. Like, for the God's sakes, man. Why is the moment so big for you? Act like you've been there.
I think he's a great combination of fun and insightful. I also think I'd like to scale it back. I think it would be perfect if he got rid of all of the, here we go, all that.
Yeah.
And the as you said, the noises on the replays of like,
watch.
Stop doing that. If we could, he's young at this. It's been 1 year. If we could take a couple of those things away, we got one of the better color commentators.
Then you've got someone great.
800-636-1067. Let's fill up the phones. What do you guys think? You in or out on Tony Romo? You're listening to The Fan.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Tony Romo was in the booth for the AFC Championship game yesterday. How do you feel about him as a color commentator? I would urge you, just like I reminded Danny when he said he doesn't like Tony Romo, to remember this is his first season doing this. This is his first year at this. And that,
sure.
Yes, he's got some flaws, some warts for sure. But the good, his upside is just so good.
Yeah, my opinion can certainly change, as it has on a million things. For example, I used to think Kirk Cousins wasn't particularly good. Now I know he is. I used to not like D'Angelo Hall. Now I'm one of my favorite Redskins of all time. It's very easy to evolve, and when he gets better, I'll let you know. We are a couple things on this. He is he's having so much fun that everybody kind of deals with it. It's the same way on the other end of the spectrum where they go, he cares so much because he threw his helmet and spiked his bat and threw a temper tantrum. A lot of people care. A lot of people have fun. A lot of people are excited to do it, but it doesn't sound like, this is my first time here, and this is just so great. I just want to thank everybody for the chance to talk about the game. Settle down. Do your job. Stop sound effecting and stop. Analyze, because when you do that, he's great. He's sensational at the, right here, Tom Brady manipulated the safety with his eyes, threw it over the top to Gronkowski. He knew he was going to Gronkowski the whole time, but he wanted to make the safety look off in a different direction. Excellent. Yes. Spot on. More of that, please. This is where they're going to throw to the running back, Jim. That's what they love to do in this situation. Boom. They do that. I love that. That's
incredible.
I got a
tweet from a guy here. He says, Romo, 85% awesome, 15% annoying. He's very good. Clean up the 15%. You've got greatness. I agree with that. I would even say maybe like 80-20. But right around there, he's mostly great, and he's a little bit over the top and a lot to deal with. And you can kind of weed some of that out. Rob says, all the way out on Romo, let him call professional bull riding. He's awful. Dominic says,
This is Daniel A. Ruye take here from Funny Danny. He has only done it for a year. Growth will happen. I like him. This is a good one from our boy Wiki. He says, it's literally impossible for me to tell how I feel about Romo. After years of Phil GM Sims, I can't evaluate Romo properly. It's like my ex was a psycho manipulator, yeah. So my current replacement level spouse seems pretty keen. Mainly, I'm just happy for Nance.
Yeah, it pummels, well, GM, and then Phil, and then, he says something completely outrageous and just not correct.
I want to get smarter. I want to learn. I want you to educate me. I even would take, if I was coaching up Romo, this is my own opinion, every person who runs a TV station or a network would be different, I would tell Romo, stop predicting as many things before plays. We don't need to know what's going to happen. Like, people get so excited. Everyone sends around the video from the first week, like, they're running it to the left here. I don't care about that.
Really?
After they run it to
the
left.
You don't like that?
No. I mean, it's fine. Like, when you said he likes to throw it to running back here, that's good. I like that.
Okay.
It's different than that video everyone sent around the first time where they're like, they're running it off left tackle here. And I was like, oh my gosh, they ran it off left tackle. That's not your job is not to predict the upcoming play. Like, I don't need that. I need silence at the snap, hear the crowd, snap of the football, and then tell me when they ran it off left tackle why the play either worked or it didn't play. But what I love about Romo is that of all the guys doing this, Mayock makes me smarter, Charles Davis makes me smarter, other guys make me think. I think I learn the most about football concepts from him, which means he's good.
Yeah.
Dave in D.C., what's up?
What's up, fellas, man? I love Romo. A couple other callers stole my thunder or the tweets that you had. I just find that either he's a genius or his intuition is just so strong that if he doesn't make it as a broadcaster, I think he'll be a great coach. But other than that, I mean, as a broadcaster, I like him.
What do you think of when
genuine.
He's, like, giddy? Literally like a child
like
in the
it.
Booth where
I,
he's, like,
I,
laughing.
I like it.
You like that?
I like it because it's different. It's not like you hear that all the time with announcers. I mean, different is always better in my opinion.
Yeah, it's definitely different.
Good call.
It feels almost as if, well, he hasn't done it before, but there's almost this rule. There's a decorum to the booth, generally.
I need professionalism.
Right. So I'll give an example. You always make fun of me for being press box Paulson.
Mm-hmm.
You can't make noise in the press box. There is no cheering. There is no clapping. There is no yelling. There is no, after a 75-yard incredible touchdown that no one saw coming, someone standing up and going, oh my gosh, and grabbing the top of their head because they're in disbelief. There's nothing. You're just kind of there and you're watching and you're stoic. You're a professional. The version of that as a color commentator is you're kind of above the fray a little bit, and you are in chill mode. He's not in chill mode. He is a fan watching the game.
Now, there's a happy, again, I keep saying this, there's a happy medium with recognizing that a moment is exciting. So when Joe Buck goes, Eli Manning avoids pressure, pass up David Tyree with the catch, first down Giants. Between that and, somebody that's over the top, that's JoJo the Idiot Circus
You like
play.
Gus Johnson,
So I
though.
Love Gus Johnson because when the moment's big, Gus Johnson rises to that moment. Jim Nance and Joe Buck, these guys that are just cool customers, always make it seem like this is the second round of a golf tournament or it's the Super Bowl. No way to distinguish between given the tone of their voices. Joe Buck, by the way, I think he's improved an awful lot in that area where he's now more excitable when things are big and he's kind of honed his game in that way. So I think he's improved. But to me, you could still be excited without the golly gee whiz. This is just so grand. I'm like a 1950s kid that got a suite. I need something in between.
Gary Olney, what's up?
Hey, Grant and Danny. Good listening to you guys. I started listening to the game. I wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt. But as the game went on, it just started to grate on me more and more. It was like listening to an 8-year-old in the booth. All the guessing that was wrong at times, all the sounds that he made. I don't want to hold it against him that he's a Cowboy because I actually do like Aikman. But Romo needs a lot of growing to do before I can listen to him again.
Yeah, I think Aikman's good. A lot of people, for some reason, don't like Aikman. I actually think he's really good. Romo, to me, already at this moment, just from a talking football X's and O's standpoint, better than Aikman as a presenter. Aikman is a smoother watch because there's not any of the crazy nonsense, the campy, the grab-your-popcorn fun, as I called it, to steal Liz Clark's comment. But Romo presents information already in a way that's probably more entertaining and smoother than Troy Aikman, who's been doing it for years. Dan in Fairfax, you're on Grant and Danny. What's up,
Dan?
Buddy?
Hey, guys. Danny, I think your best impressions are Ray Knight, Jerry Jones, Ted Knight, and Stewie from Family Guy.
I like that. It's a good list by you.
Grant, I love your on-the-field segment after Skins games.
I appreciate that. Thank you, buddy.
I agree with Danny. It's a little over the top with it. Ooh, I don't know. Was it a fumble or not? Let's look at the replay.
But
I think if he tones it down, a little bit, he can be really good. He's very knowledgeable. I mean, you know, he used to be a quarterback. So
I love that.
Yeah, I think that's...
Thanks, Dan.
For whatever reason, we've all kind of mentioned the same thing, too. When they go to these replays on close calls, he turns it up to 11. The strip, which was an amazing play by Miles Jack, by the way.
What a play.
That was ridiculous.
By the way, the quickest whistle of all time.
It was.
That's a damn touchdown for the Jaguars, by the way. Potentially, they couldn't wait to blow the whistle. Oh, that was annoying. They only blew the whistle one time against the Patriots, too. One penalty. I'm sure that's what happened. That's how it went.
Yeah, I'm sure they committed a penalty.
That one penalty.
I specifically remember, though, that sequence thinking that Tony Romo was a little bit too much. I'm going, wait a second, let's let us watch this thing. He kept yelling and laughing and making noises. And the noises don't make any sense to me. At one point, Nance kind of called him out. I don't remember exactly what he said, but he said something like, are those words, Tony? And he's like, no, Jim. It was just making weird sounds.
Nah, Jim. Nah, man.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, our double play. What did we do this weekend that had nothing to do with sports? I saw an awesome movie. And I went to a weird event. I can tell you about those things. What'd you do?
I like that. I had a stand-up show. It was okay. Pretty funny. Something funny happened. I wasn't that funny, but something funny happened. I'll tell you that story.
Double play is next. Beltway Blitz at noon on G&D. DC.com/live. Let's get to our double play. Quick lay of the land ahead on the show. Beltway Blitz at noon, 12 o'clock hour. What Scott McLuhan said about Kirk Cousins that made national headlines. We'll talk Brady's thumb, Eagles fans getting into fights. And we'll check in on the Super Bowl matchup as well, all in our last 2 hours. First, though, our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
So I had a stand-up show this Saturday at Positano's in Bethesda. I've done that room a number of times. It's always fun. And it's not far from NBC Sports Washington. It's got this cool little side room. About 100 people show up. It's always a blast. So after the show, a brother comes up to me, and he's like,
your brother?
No. A black gentleman comes up to me, and he was saying, like, a whole bunch of stuff. It was very nice, and he bought a CD, and the whole thing was really cool. It was really very complimentary. And this is what he said to me. And so this is what he sounded like. He goes, so you come on after them Junkies? I said, yes. He goes, I love the Junkies, man. I love the Junkies. I listened to them for like 20 years, man. I'm going to listen to you now. I said, that's great. Yes, we come on right after the Junkies.
Did he know our show existed before your stand-up
show? He did not. He had no idea. He couldn't have named it.
How is that a thing?
I think it's a thing for
humbling.
A lot of people. So, yeah, it's one of those things. A reminder that we still quite haven't made it yet in the same capacity. Because I'm going to listen to y'all's show now, man. You were really good. I said, I appreciate that. He goes, do me one favor, man. Do this one thing for me. I said, okay, what is it? He goes, y'all need to tell Cakesy I love that man. My whole family love Cakes. We love Cakes. I said, wow, that's funny. Yes, he's the nicest guy ever. He's really cool, but he's in a box sometimes, but it's funny. We do daily fantasy shtick, et cetera. He goes, I love Cakes. But I hate that mother bleep, EB. I hate Bickle.
What?
Tell him that. I'm probably not going to tell him that. I guess I am now by transitivity.
Well, now he's going to know by listening.
We love Cakes, but we hate Bickle. I said, how is that possible? How is that the pairing that you end up feeling that strongly about? Isn't that odd?
Yeah. Seems strange to me.
Well, I ended up cracking up about that. That made me laugh very hard. He wanted me to actually deliver that message to the two guys. Say, like, hey, Cakes, I met a guy on Saturday that loves you. But hates Eric Bickle.
Very weird.
Very strange.
And you didn't tell EB until right now on the
radio. I guess now I'm telling him by transitivity.
Shouldn't you have told him?
I feel like this was a better way to do it.
Okay.
Because it's less a personal insult. We're like, I met someone that hates your guts. This is now like turning into a kind of a mildly entertaining story. Kind of, isn't that interesting?
Isn't it always weird to you how like people will listen? And I feel like personalities can be pretty similar. But like someone will really like one person and hate the other person.
Yeah.
And I feel like whatever opinion you have on someone, it doesn't change the more you listen to them. Because it's almost like being married or something. Like whatever the little thing that grates on you is, over time, it's only going to grow and grow and grow.
I agree with that. It's an interesting thing to like on a two-person show where we're all, you and me are doing the thing that we do. We disagree sometimes because that's like being a human being and doing a show. It's going to happen a million times over. But the like, I can't stand Danny and think Grant is great, or vice versa. I don't know why I always find that so curious. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Like, how did you end up there?
I like to think we're like a package deal.
Yeah, the one time you heard me and you disagreed with me about, like, not wanting to go see a band that you like or something. Is that what it was? Like, I'm always wondering, like, what's the thing that caught you and decided to put you in the certain channel?
I can say this, and I'm not just gassing you up. Legitimately, I can say, I don't think I've ever had anyone tell me, like, oh, I can't stand Danny. I have had people do what someone did to me this weekend. I was at Yard House, hadn't been in like a month.
Uh-huh.
I went and got, guess what?
Mr. Maui Pineapple Chicken is here.
That's right.
Mr. Maui Pineapple Chicken, everybody.
I hadn't gotten Maui Pineapple Chicken in weeks, by the way. It had been a show of epic proportions.
Still remembered you and everything?
They remembered me. They seated me just in my favorite spot. No, I actually had to wait forever at the bar because there was like a 90-minute wait for a seat.
Whoa.
Apparently, I'm not a VIP.
Mm-mm.
Just chilling, waiting at the bar. So I'm waiting. Eventually, I get a seat. We bumped into some friends of my fiance's, one of whom is a huge Patriots fan. And this guy is, when you talk about Sully from Southie,
mm-hmm.
he sounds like Sully. Like, he's like, yes, so Tom's got a hard matchup tomorrow with the Jags. Like, that's how he talks.
Dude, it's wicked hard, that one.
Really nice guy. Seems like a fairly nice Patriots fan, if there's such a thing.
Competent.
But he had been listening to the show. He listens every day,
I guess. Is that right?
And he was like, what is Danny's problem with his hatred of Brady and Belichick and the Pats fans? And I was like, yeah, that was a pretty ridiculous take, I thought. Because like last week, you still do it now. It's how you feel. It's just absurd. But you basically are like, Patriots fans don't deserve anything. They should never get to win again. They should be sad for 40 years.
They've had enough winning.
And this guy's just listening to that as a Patriots fan. He's like, what is his deal? And I'm like, honestly, man, I was like, I don't try to like guess where his anger comes from sometimes. He's like, I think you were right. I think it's jealousy or something. And I'm like, yeah, I think he's jealous of the Patriots and he hates all their fans because of it. But it was just funny. He kept like, he's like, so why is he so mad at us?
Yeah, but like, but break it down. What's his problem?
Right.
It's like, honestly, what's wrong with the guy?
I'm like, listen, man, again, like I work with him all the time. I consider him to be a very close friend. I was like, there's things I probably think that he thinks are ridiculous. I don't agree with that stance that Patriots fans should never get to see a win again.
Yeah, it's someone else's turn. Don't overcomplicate it.
Right.
You, sir, who spoke to Grant, thank you for your, I guess, not destroying me and being nice to my friend.
No,
Grant.
I think he likes you. He's just like, what's his deal here?
You don't deserve to win anymore. It's someone else's turn. More specifically mine, but you guys have won enough. You've got plenty of championships since 2000. It's more than anyone else deserves. It is someone else's turn. That's just an objective truth. That's where we're at on that.
Time for your pals. Double play. I'll make it quick. Couple of things. First of all, I went to a boat show this weekend. I've never been to a boat show before. My dad texted me, said, you want to go to a boat show? I said, I do want to go to a boat show. I had fun at the boat show. It was a good time in Fredericksburg.
I know very little about boat shows. Not much experience there.
It was a lot of fun. Second, the movie 12 Strong is fantastic.
Mm.
I loved it. Your boy had tears in his eyes at one point late in the movie with that music playing.
Oh.
The Patriot in me, the Danny Amendola in me was mm-hmm. feeling the moment in the movie theater. Chris Hemsworth's the best-looking guy ever. No one should look like him.
Can you imagine being that handsome?
I went with my parents and my brother after the boat show, and I turned to my mom a couple times. I'm like, no guy should be that good-looking. Like, what are we doing here? Chris Hemsworth's just a stud. I think Michael Peña is a great actor, regardless of what Jason Bishop says. I think he's awesome. He didn't like the acting in the movie. I didn't have a big problem with it. There was some cheesy dialogue, as there tends to be in some war movies.
Yeah.
There's four or five throwaway lines that are cringeworthy where you're like, okay, we didn't need to say that. In general, the action's amazing. The story is incredible. It's a true story, declassified, on the first 12 soldiers into the fight in Afghanistan after the World Trade Centers came down.
How is my guy Rob Riggle in this thing?
Riggle's very good. Smaller role, four or five scenes. He was in the military before he was a comedian.
Right.
So he's just playing Rob Riggle.
So he played his commanding officer, I believe.
Yes,
in this.
It's a great movie. It's a better story. I loved it. I'll see it again in theaters. I'm telling you. I couldn't have been more inspired by the movie, and it doesn't have to be a holiday to thank our troops. I got to, again, just say, you guys are unbelievable, and you're the heroes.
Well said.
What an amazing story and film that is. Go see 12 Strong, true story about our first foray into a fight in Afghanistan where we didn't know what we were getting into, and we're all of a sudden having people jump on horseback and lead the charge.
How many mild buffalo wings does it get?
Out of five?
Good. Don't you do a 10-point scale, don't you? You do a 10-wing scale?
I do a 10-wing scale. I'm going to give it 8.5 wings.
8.5 mild buffalo wings.
I loved it.
Mm.
Really, really good. Grant and Danny on the Fan will go blitzing at noon, round the Beltway, and at 12:18,
Scott McLuhan on Kirk Cousins and what he thinks about the quarterback. You're listening to The Fan.
Folks, Danny Ruggier from my pals at Ted Britt Ford Go. Go see them in Fairfax or Chantilly. Just a click away at TedBritt.com. Give them a holler because right now is the time. 130% Kelley Blue Book value for your trade. Up to 130% Kelley Blue Book value for your trade. So you make a profit, really, on your trade-in. Apply that and use it to get a brand new car from Ted Britt Ford that you're going to love. You're going to love it. 2018 F-150 pickup. Up to $11,000 off the MSRP. Or lease one for just $249 a month. New 2018 Ford Explorer. Up to $10,000 off the MSRP. Or lease one for just $230 a month. I've done this a couple times, guys. I've gone to Ted Britt Ford. I came away with two different rides. 2016, we got the 2016 Ford Edge. And 2017, by gum, we went and got the 2017 Ford Fusion. I love them both. Love the experience. I'm going to go back again when it's new car time. These guys are the best. They know what they're doing. It's how you stay in business, frankly, for almost 60 years. That's what they're doing. It's how they do it. They want to take care of you. Give them a chance. Go see them at Ted Britt Ford. Please tell them, Danny.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.